It's interesting. I think in America, Puritanism, Christianity generally, is still a big part of things. It's not dissimilar to Scotland, actually, where I come from, where you've got Calvin right at the heart of the view of things. Every TV screen, every billboard is screaming at you contradictory messages about the validity of desire as the main way to judge your world and move through it. Every political stump speech that you hear in election season, either crudely or delicately in some sort of subtle way, reinforces a view of the universe that underpins desire. Buy things. George Bush's famous thing after 9/11, go out and buy stuff. Go out and buy things. And, you know, people try and legislate from this kind of perspective, I think because they believe that the world is inherently shot through with a moral order that's derived from God. That is their whole model of things. Now, some people, I'm sure, exploit it quite cynically. But I'm sure some people also believe it. And fundamentally, I think the experience they have is one of fear. There they are, faced with the cold universe. They've got this picture of the universe where you're in some relationship to an absent divine being. And it's actually terrifying. It's completely confusing. And you're driven around like a headless chicken by all these really strong desires. That can also be terrifying. It can be incredibly lonely. It can be incredibly challenging. And again, it's a good point of empathy. If people who believe that kind of thing and legislate from it and advertise from it are confused and pained and subject to loneliness, etc., well, so are we. So are we. We're also confused. And we're also afraid, and we see things in this kind of mad way. From a certain perspective, the world is completely mad. It's fairyland out there. The Buddha says in one place, all worldlings are mad. All worldlings are mad. We are worldlings. The word he uses is prathujanas. We are prathujanas. Everyone in the world is mad because they go about as if things are one way when they're not, because they have desire as their main motivational thing and way to steer, and it doesn't help. So what do we have? We have the Buddha's precepts. So let's go back to that precept again, the third precept. We have our meditation practices, but the Buddha has an alternative to madness that he proposes. He replaces God and the devil with something that's a lot more human and sane. So just look at the words that are used. The Buddhist tradition, when it looks at ethics and behaviour, doesn't talk about good and bad. It talks about skillful and unskillful. So you're given a precept that says, abstain from behaviour that causes harm in the sexual arena. Move towards behaviours that encourage stillness and simplicity and contentment. And you're trusted as an adult to work out what that means. And you can have a skillful approach or a less skillful approach. There is no gigantic looming good and evil over the top of you. We can replace fear of punishment in the afterlife or in this life with a cool weighing up of your options, a weighing up of your experience, a learning from your experience around desire and around sex. You can take stock in the face of your experience, and particularly in the face of any suffering you've experienced or you've caused. You can take stock and you can make amends, you can make good. It's a very key part of the Buddhist tradition is if you realise that you've got some fault in relation to another person, make it good. Make it good. Because actually there isn't somewhere else where you're going to be punished or rewarded. You have this life now, you have your relationships now, make them good.
Is there a certain day or ritual by which, as Buddhists, we make amends? And I'm thinking of the Jewish tradition of Yom Kippur.
No, there isn't actually a particular one. I think it's probably...
I know it's encouraged in the prayers, but I wondered...
Well, in the Buddhist tradition, it's more like an everyday thing. A lot of people don't know that Buddhism has a history and tradition of confession. You hear the word confession and you immediately think the Spanish Inquisition or something. The Buddhist tradition of confession, you're not asking for forgiveness from God. God doesn't exist in that sense at all. So what you're doing is you're sitting down with your friends, people who share your values and who you trust, I'm going to come on to this in a minute, actually, just to finish. And you basically say, yesterday I found myself bitching about this person. Yesterday I found myself having an interior monologue where I hated my mother, or whatever it is, you know. Yesterday I shouted at somebody. Yesterday somebody cut me off in traffic and I flipped them off. You know, yesterday I spent the whole time I was supposed to be meditating just getting angrier and angrier at so-and-so because they did that to me and how dare they do that to me and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. All those things, from a Buddhist perspective, would be good things to confess. Not because somebody's going to forgive you, but because you are then making them more conscious in yourself and saying, that's where I've let myself down. I'm trying to live by these precepts. I'm trying to live by these values, and I let myself down. And nobody absolves you from your sin. They just hear it. They hear and accept your confession. And they kind of hope that you'll do better for yourself.